Okay, we were discussing Munisutta, which is available in the Sutta Nipata. It's also a very interesting sutta where Buddha discusses certain, we can say, fairly interesting aspects of a saint. Now, the first one is actually related to his seclusion. We already discussed this part last week, where Buddha mentioned Santavatu Bhayam Jatam. Nikete jayate raju aniketa ma santavam etang ve muni dassana. Now this is actually, we need to understand now, even though now we are me as a monk and you all as a lay people, so we are talking about this particular sutta, and this sutta is actually directed towards a more secluded practice, a person who is fairly, we can say, a kind of a saint living in a particular village, we can say, but he is alone and practicing alone and leading a very dedicated spiritual life, and that is what we are trying to discuss today. Yeah. So actually that thing, when we are completing, the thing is, last time we discussed, this is related to the consciousness, how consciousness is associating a particular place, and then it is calling, it is someone, something associating a house, and later, if we are able to make it unassociating, not associating anything, then we can call it aniketasari, or certain other things, like as I mentioned in this Hariddhakani Sutta, where Buddha give father actually at this place, the Venerable Mahakacchana, give an interesting explanation how the mind can be not associating anything. Consciousness where it is homeless. So those aspects actually we discussed last week. And now we can get into the next verse. This verse is going like this. Yo jata machija na ropayeya jayanta massa nanuppavijje tamahu ekang muninang charantang addakhi so santi padang mahesi. One who, having cut off what has arisen, would not foster what is arisen or nurture it. They call him a muni, living alone. That great rishi saw the state of peace. Now you can see these verses are very concise, but has a very deep meaning. So we can't immediately understand the meaning, and we need to go through it for some time and explore what are the possibilities, what are the areas that we can look into. And that is how actually we can understand the proper meaning. So immediately we probably can't understand what Buddha meant here, because each verse talking a particular deep aspects of the spirituality. Now, whenever things are arising, so those things can be considered as sankata or the patisamuppanna or conditioned phenomena. So what typically happens is we grasp them and we hold them. We are not allowing them to take their own lifespan. Rather, we are promoting them and we attach to them. So likewise, we intervene them. But on the other hand, when someone is fairly developed, so he simply allow them to pass. He doesn't interfere. So as a result of that, what happens is they become more and more natural, and we are not interfering. We are not getting into any kind of fabrication. Rather, whatever arising, so they simply see their own cessation. So as a result of that, so he may be having a very unattached mind, a dispassionate mind. And as a result of that, he is maintaining kind of a relaxed mind. So that is somewhat highlighted in this verse. Actually, in the next verse, there's another aspect is highlighted, ව්‍යා සංඛාය වත්තුනි පහය බීජං සිනේහ මස්ස නානුප්පවෙච්චේ සවේ මුනි ජාති khයන්ත දස්සේ තක්කම් පහය න උපේති සංඛා. Now this is very interesting area. Certainly Buddha talks on the various kinds of conventions and again how rebirth going to happen. So those kind of aspects are somewhat concisely highlighted in this verse. In order to explain this, first I like to explain you some aspects of consciousness, then karma and the craving. Now these three are actually very beautifully metaphorically explained in certain suttas. I have taken one example sutta here, Patama Bhava Sutta. So in this Patama Bhava Sutta, what Buddha mentioned is that itiko ananda kammang kettang vinyanang bijang tanha sineho. Now you can understand these are the essential components in the, say, in the farming or in planting. So you need seeds and you need a very fertile field. And again you need water or moisture in order for those seeds to grow. So Buddha say the similar thing is happening in this sansaric journey. So vijnana, the consciousness, is operating like the seed. And the kamma is the field. And then the craving is the moisture. Now this is a very interesting picture that we can understand, we try to comprehend. So how vijnana becomes sort of a seed, how kamma being the kind of a fertile field, and again how craving becomes the moisture. So that is where all together is what we call as a kind of a living being. So when we can say a new life is born, a new life starts, so we can say the consciousness as a seed, now it is having the potential to grow. But it needs a fertile ground to grow. It alone can't grow. So therefore, a field is necessary. If there is no field, if there is no place, if there is no fertile ground, then it can't grow alone. On the other hand, even that is available, if there is no enough water, moisture, that is also not possible. So all, everything have to be available, then only a proper growing, a kind of a growth, maybe plantation going to happen. Now similarly, in our consciousness, even if we apply this to the momentary experience, say if we simply see and if we simply ignore that without having much interest, then we can't say that consciousness had a very strong footing there. It is simply seeing, that's just seeing. Similarly, if there is just hearing, we can't say, okay, immediately consciousness has established there and now is growing and is fully established. Rather, the hearing is just hearing. A simple smelling, if we simply know something, I mean, and we simply discarded that, and we can't say that mind or consciousness is fully established there and now it is growing to the full-fledged level. So this complete growing, complete establishment requires certain, say, capacity, not immediate. So that is why Buddha sometimes highlight ditte dittamattam bhavissati, sutte suttamattam bhavissati, mute mutamattam bhavissati, vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. So that is a kind of a restrainment that Buddha highlights. Once we have grown to a certain degree, now don't now allow consciousness to sort of feed. Just seeing is all right. You are, it is not that you are deliberately looking at something. But while you are traveling, while you are going, say you saw something, that's all. But you are not registering it in your mind. You are not going and exploring it. You are not interested in that. You are not thinking about it. You are not proliferating about it. Seeing is just seeing. Similarly, while you are traveling, while you are, say, staying, say you hear a particular sound. Just sound has happened, that has gone, it has disappeared, that's it. Nothing registered in your mind, and mind is not shocked, mind is not bothered, mind is not much disturbed. You simply heard it and then it is gone. So likewise, if we are going through our experience, so that means we are able to navigate through a kind of a path where various obstacles are available, but still we are capable of navigating through that path. Now, in this path also, the consciousness needs some sort of a fertile ground. Consciousness needs some sort of a craving area so that it can grow. Then only we can say, okay, now a kind of a birth is happening, a full-fledged human body is happening, he's operating as a human being now. On the other hand, say, in a certain incident, if you are applying, say we are seeing and now you are interested in that, now you have a craving for that, and now mind is further interested of that, now you are exploring that, and now consciousness has a footing, now it is well established. So likewise, all these different factors have to be fulfilled, then only we can say everything is somewhat satisfied, consciousness has found a footing, and now consciousness is well established. But here, Buddha mentioned, kammam kettam vijnanam bijam tanha sineho avijja nivaranam sattanam tanha sanyojananam hinaya dhatuya vijnanam patikritam evam ayatin punabbhavabi nibbatti hoti. Now this is how Buddha explains the rebirth, where you have a previous available a field of kamma, you now say as a new consciousness as a seed, that means the craving is also available. So you are operating as a being, as a human being. And interesting point here further is that a continuation happens from life to life. Kind of a continuation happens in this, say, in this situation, in the inferior realm, in the karma realm, in the rupa realm. Now we can go back to this verse in order to understand what is the context. Sankhaya vattuni pahaya bija. Sinehe massa nanuppa vecce. Save muni jati khayanta dassi. Takkam pahaya na upeti sankha. Now you know, Save Muni Jati Khayanta Dasi. Now this person, this Muni, is someone who is eager to end this samsara, eager to continue, or rather completely stop this samsaric journey. He wants to end it. It is not that he is trying to continue it, he is trying to prolong it, rather he wants to stop it now. So that is his vision. Save Muni Jati Khayanta Dasi. Now he is looking forward for the end of this samsaric journey. A seer of the final end of birth. And he doesn't have the craving. So that is one important ingredient. The moisture, the craving. And sinehemasa nanuppavicci. So he would not nurture it with moisture. Now the craving has to be fed. You need to desire. You need to sort of promote that desire. You need to support that desire. Then only we can say, okay, you are nurturing. You are, say, watering. But now he is not doing it. He is not watering. He is not nurturing the seed. He is not nurturing the seed through the craving, many, many desires. Rather, he is now calming down desires, abandoning desires, abandoning craving. So as a result of that, what happens? The moisture is also not available. The watering is not available. So that part is not available. And one thing is that he is targeting end of the samsara, end of this rebirth cycle. The other thing is he is not promoting the craving, the nurturing part, the moisture part, he is not promoting that either. Sankhaya vattuni pahaya bija. Now, sankhaya vattuni, now here we can say, okay, the field part. So now he fully understood the ground. So he has a full understanding about the kamma, that ground, fertile ground, he has a fair understanding. So in that sense, we can say he is not promoting a person making kamma, volitional activities, as much as possible. He is now fairly not making new kamma. Already arisen kamma may be available, but he is not generating new kamma. So he has a full understanding about how kamma is operating. First, he understood Okay, this is the say sammāditti that he needs to operate, the right view he needs to operate. He has to abandon all the wrong activities, unwholesome activities. He needs to operate in the wholesome side, continue the good activities, wholesome activities. And later, he is trying to understand, okay, now I don't need to identify with any of these activities, either wholesome or unwholesome. So now he is very much like disclaiming all the I making, my making. So that's a very deeper, we can say, understanding that he is having. So he's not identifying with any of these. So what happened is, now the karma, newcomer is fairly reduced. The generation of newcomer is fairly reduced. And the Pahaya Bija, and he has completely abandoned the seed. Now he is not giving opportunity for the consciousness to grow as a kind of a conditioned phenomena, as a growing phenomena, as we discussed, as a person who is having a house. Now he is not going to do that. Always he is now trying to keep the consciousness without a house, without footing, without giving ground, without giving fertilizer, without giving moisture. So the consciousness is therefore, we can say, it is not the typical conditioned consciousness or fabricated consciousness. So such fabricated consciousness, as much as possible, he is reducing. So if you can remember into the Patisamuppada, so Buddha mentioned avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana. So when there are ignorance available, so that ignorance promotes more and more formations, more and more fabrications. So more and more fabrications, more and more formations means more and more that fabricated consciousness or established consciousness, conditioned consciousness. But if we are able to minimize that, if we are able to minimize the formations, fabrications, that means the possibility of generating new consciousness or established consciousness is very less. So now consciousness become unestablished, unassociated, or we can say it doesn't have a footing. So that is the area. So this particular muni is now sort of targeting, because his aim, his vision is to end the samsara. He want to stop it. He want to stop the endless journey. So how he is going to stop it is very beautifully highlighted here, where he is not promoting that established consciousness, and he has a proper understanding about the field, that is the karma. And again, he is not promoting, fertilizing the craving. And his vision is to end the samsara. So this you can see, I mean, in this very small verse, so all this depth, you can say the essence of whole vipassana is very concisely included. So we have to explore it in depth to understand how deep the meaning is. If we simply look at it from the surface, we can't get that. But when we are analyzing it a little deeply and get some light from certain other suttas, then only we understand, oh my goodness, this kind of depth is there into this verse. So likewise, this is very interesting sutta. And again, we need to understand, okay, it is not the typical mundane things that Buddha highlight here, but rather very interesting, very higher level of training Buddha highlights here. So it doesn't mean that we are immediately into that. It doesn't mean that we can immediately do that, but this is the direction that we need to move. So we have to have kind of a direction in our practice. Okay, this is the area, this is the direction that I need to mature in my vipassana practice. So this kind of verses is giving that light, giving that direction, and giving that guidance. And Buddha's words actually is promoting that. So Buddha's words actually highlights that and give that clear direction. Okay, this is the area that you need to target. So you need to target, okay, I need to end the samsara, stop this rebirth cycle. If you want to do that, okay, now you got to avoid promoting desires. Rather, you need to abandon desires, abandon craving. And again, you need to understand something about the karma as well. So that is the field. So you don't do any unwholesome activities which may prolong your sort of samsaric journey. And even when you are doing the wholesome activities, don't identify with them. Don't try to say that I am the one who did it. I am the one who did it. Rather, don't promote that sort of an ignorance. Avijja anusaya, the tendency of ignorance. Don't promote that. Rather, allow things to happen. I mean, impromptly you are happening. Things are happening. You are spontaneously you are acting. Acting in the sense, appropriately you are taking the decision, you are taking an action. But you are not claiming, oh, I am the one who did it. You are not promoting a self-view out of that activity. Rather, you are simply continuing it. So that is very much a very kind of a very clear direction Buddha is giving, a very strong type of determination, direction is given in this verse, how one is targeting the end of rebirth cycle. How one is targeting the end of this samsaric journey. For him, a very clear direction is given by the Buddha in this sutta, in this particular verse. Okay, with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Yeah. We have 5 questions today.
Right.
Okay. So, first question is a Dhamma sermon question. This is actually from the previous week. So, this dear Bhante, this question is based on Dhamma talk on Munisutta 29 Jan. Bhante explained very well how unmindful dwelling in the form, feelings, perception and formations can lead to getting driven by these, as well as rising of defilements, and more dwelling creates a whirlpool or tsunami of the negative scenario, which binds us to the samsara. As I understood, we can develop mindfulness and enable the choice of not getting driven and stay away from the above ripple effect. This seems like that is the only one choice or path of staying detached from the negative process without abiding and being free. There is no positive process to cultivate at this stage. Is my thinking correct, Bhante? With metta, that's the another question.
I can see actually, actually you need to do it, but in order to do it, you need some positive sort of qualities. Without it, you can't do it. Say, for example, now even today we discuss that point. Okay, you need to have kind of a continuous mindfulness so that consciousness is not established and craving is not fed and you are not accumulating karma. Now these things can't, I mean, even though we call it, we talk it as a theoretical thing, we can't do it practically unless we develop our mind with the necessary good qualities. So therefore the path is, it is true that we need to do it, we need to implement this, this is the plan. But in order to implement this plan, we need all the skills what we are targeting. We need mindfulness, we need a fair amount of clear comprehension. Say we need energy, the courage, effort. And again we need faith. Confidence, and again we need to look at the situation and need to understand properly what's right now going on and fully aware if there is kind of eye making, mind making happens, and then we need to abandon that. So likewise it's a kind of a combination of many things. Now even though the plan is available, we can't implement it unless we have all the necessary skills. So developing these skills is therefore part of the practice. And once these skills are fairly growing, now we can start implementing the plan, and that further improves our qualities, improves our mindfulness, improves our wisdom. And therefore, I can partially agree with you, but not totally, because fair amount of good qualities, necessary skills are to be developed in order to implement the plan.
Question number 2 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, with the sitting and walking practice, I started being mindful on the day-to-day activities, which I do alone. When brushing teeth, I try to observe the sensations when holding the brush, during brushing activity and while rinsing and finishing off. I feel the hardness of the brush on my fingers, how the hand movement occurs, how the bristles feel on my teeth and gum, the softness of the toothpaste and taste, etc. However, my mind snaps multiple times to various thoughts and mind-made stories during this time. Based on Bhante's advice, this is the nature of the mind and I can be aware of it, of that. But what alarms me is that the rate of distraction is very high. If I compare with sitting and walking, I can say there can be less than 5 distractions during the first 10 minutes. But when brushing teeth, this can be as high as 20 or more, meaning every 2 to 3 minutes, every minute, 2 to 3 times the mind distracts and comes back. Is this due to the soft nature of sati during the day-to-day activities, Bhante? Much merits for your valuable insights. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, it could be because in the day-to-day activities, we are not giving enough emphasis to that activity. So we may be maintaining kind of a relaxed or lapse type of awareness, not full dedicated kind of awareness. So at the beginning, we need some kind of a deliberate type of mindfulness, otherwise mind get distracted. But the interesting thing is, as you are continuing and again when you are say navigating towards the some levels of vipassana, then mindfulness become available for you and you don't need to deliberately establish, then you are fully aware of what is happening right now. On such situation, mindfulness is effortless. It is not deliberate, purposeful type of mindfulness. What you have is a very soft awareness, very, say, effortless mindfulness. At that time, hardly no distraction, very much like. And even there are things, you are fully aware. Even things are happening and you are fully aware of the whole thing. You are not completely into conceptual proliferation. You are not completely into mind-made type of world. Rather, you are well-grounded. Therefore, don't worry. I mean, at the moment you need so this kind of purposeful, deliberate type of mindfulness. Otherwise, mind get distracted. That is how we all have to begin. But later, things may grow to a say, better level.
Question number 3 of 7, mindful walking. Dear Bhante, during the walking practice, I focus on the lower part of the body and sensations on the soles. I can mainly identify and observe how pressure transmits on various parts of the sole and the differences between the left and right. These days, I found more attention around the areas where no sensation exists. These appear as patches in the middle of the sensations, which are more or less blurred after 15 to 20 minutes. I can suspend the attention on these unknown areas, similar to suspension of awareness above the walking process when auto walking happens. Don't know if these two are the same or different phenomena and thought of checking with Bhante, with Metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, when you start your practice, say you can distinctly know these different phenomena, that is welcome. But as you are continuing, everything start mixing, everything appear like a kind of a flux. And at that time, your mind is not interested of looking at it. As a result of that, now mind is maintaining a distance. Now it is a detached observation, a dispassionate kind of observation, because there is nothing significant is there or nothing interested is there, and you can't find out the boundaries. Everything is mixed. So this is quite all right. So it's the evaluation of the process. Sorry, rather the evolution of the process. So at the beginning, it is true that you can distinctly know different phenomena. Fine, no problem. But as you are further and further investigating them, now you understand, okay, everything appears the same. Everything is behaving in the same pattern. Everything is subjected to arising and passing away. Everything is subjected to decaying, disappearing, fading off. And they are all beyond my control. So that understanding is growing within you. So as a result of that, now everything is very much like mixed up. Everything like blurred. But at that time, I mean, it is not that your mindfulness become blunt. As a result of that, things become blurred. Rather, now a fair amount of dispassion has grown. And what the mind is interested in is not the individual phenomena or individual characteristics. Rather, now it is taking the whole bunch Everything is showing the same picture. Unattached, dispassionate kind of thing is there. So therefore, I mean, so this sort of evolution is possible during your meditation session, and you can welcome that. And the important thing is you need to continue the practice, even though they are appearing unattractive or not interested, but you need to continue it. You need to continue the practice. And even when they are not attractive, and even when mind is sort of dispassionate, you got to continue the practice. And then it is further growing, that dispassion is further growing, the unattached observation further growing, and the seclusion of the mind further growing. So that is necessary. So therefore, you can continue the practice.
Question number 4 of 7, general question. Dear Swami Mahansi, is there a method or technique to identify the times we are not mindful? When I observe sensations of the body, a sound or some thoughts as a third person, I inferentially understand that beforehand I was not mindful. Example, when I wash hand, I feel the water flowing on the skin, coldness on hands, etc. So I know I'm mindful. After a few hours, when I eat, I observe the sensation of taste in the mouth, so I know I'm mindful. But in between these two deliberate mindful awareness activities, can I assume I was not mindful with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, we can say so, because the thing is, still we need some kind of significant activity to be mindful. So at this level, that is the situation. Say in between, the situation is very much blurred because there is no significant activity. It's a kind of a transition between two important activities. So therefore, mind has ignored that. At that moment, mind is very much like unmindful. But during the two important activities, yes, mind is mindful. But the later, actually, this gap also become available for you, and you can be even mindful during the gap. Just to give a simple example, now say you are practicing sitting meditation, and now the time it is available, now the time has indicated for you to go and do the walking practice. Now, while sitting, assume that you are able to maintain mindfulness. And while walking, also assume that you are able to develop mindfulness. But how about in between? How about the time that you are rising up from your seat, and then you are walking towards the walking path, and you start walking practice? So that transition period, most of the time we are not mindful, because we ignore that part. We think, okay, sitting meditation, sitting session is the important one. Walking session is the important one. So we are targeting those two, say, activities, ignoring the in-between transition period. But the important thing is to continuation of the mindfulness. Okay, while sitting you are mindful, and then you are getting up, again you are mindful. Now you are walking towards the walking path, again you are maintaining mindfulness. And now you are walking, and again continuing the same mindfulness. So likewise, if you are able to say maintain kind of a continuous mindfulness, so that is the best. But immediately we can't do it, but slowly, don't worry. So these little gaps that you have missed are going to disappear, and the whole kind of a continuous flow of mindfulness may be available in the future. I mean, it doesn't mean that we are able to have a perfect mindfulness from the beginning of our day and till the end of the day. We have a perfect mindfulness in the future. It is also may not happen. But overall, you can understand, okay, most of the time, now I can maintain mindfulness. Only very rarely, I may get unmindful. So that sort of assessment probably may be available in the future. So therefore, just continue. And the thing is that we are, certain activities, we are very much labeling, okay, this is an important activity. So I have to be mindful when you are doing it. On certain things, we simply ignore. So we are not mindful. But how about maintaining kind of an attitude, okay, each and every activity is something important. Each and every activity is important for me to develop mindfulness. So if you are having that kind of an attitude, probably you can further improve.
Question number 5 of 7. This is a Dhamma Saman question. Dear Bhante, today's Dhamma talk, Kamma is the field, consciousness is the seed, craving is the moisture. While experiencing some form of an unattached mind in the practice time to time, can we think that this unattached nature is represented by not having craving or damned craving momentarily?
Exactly.
That's the end of the question.
Exactly. So that is why, that's why I was, even now I explaining, now as a result of the practice, instead of passion, instead of craving, instead of desire, what we are getting is the dispassion. Now as a result of that, now the mind is detached from the process. So the craving is very much like temporary subsided. So craving is not operating right now. You are not feeding. You are not feeding the mind with craving. Rather, that watering part, moisturizing part is not available. So when mind is not grasping anything, that means craving is not operating.
Question number 6 of 7 is again a Dhamma Saman question. Dear Bhante, if we are not going to identify with the wholesome deeds, how can we get the support from the merits in our samsaric journey? When should one abandon these good deeds identification? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, you can donate them to others. So that is the interesting part of this practice. So you can say now as you are growing in vipassana, so you are more and more trusting about yourself, you are more and more trusting about the path, not much about the merit in a way. So, and what we are developing is, we can say, a higher merit. So as Lokusana used to say, it's the adhikusala. So what we are trying to accomplish in the vipassana is where the adhikusala, it is not the mundane kind of merit. So if you can remember certain suttas, where Buddha mentioned, say, vipassana merit is the most sublime kind of merit. When compared to the other type of merits, like say donations, say to this people, that people, and donating this, donating that. So when compared to them, the vipassana merit is the most superior type of merit. So don't think that that you may run out of merit. So actually what you are doing is a more and more sublime kind of merit formation. In order to continue that path, you need to sort of abandon even eye making, mind making. So that means, yeah, very much like fading off the defilements, fading off the craving, fading off the latent tendencies. If you are promoting a self, if you are promoting a person, if you continue the self identification with respect to the, say, what we call wholesome deeds, that is also samadhitti, but it's the mundane level of samadhitti. So as you know, Buddha talks about two levels of samadhitti. The first part is the mundane type of samadhitti. The second part is the supramundane type of samadhitti. So when one reaches supramundane type of samadhitti, he is not promoting the identification. He's not promoting as a self. He doesn't want to highlight as a self. He doesn't want to establish as a person, individual, a self. Rather, he understood, okay, nothing is substantial. There is no component in this whole body, no component in this whole, say, mental activity that I can call as myself. So that's a kind of a deep understanding that he is now sort of trying to continue. So as a result of that, even when a wholesome deed is conducted, he is not going to identify with that as a person, as an individual. So that's a kind of a later understanding. So don't worry at the moment thinking that you may run out of merit to the long samsara. Rather, if you are continuing this path, so the path will take care of you. Dhamma will take care of you.
Question number 7 of 7, this is the last question and it's a general question. Venerable Bhante, could you please explain what is meant by consciousness in Buddhism? Much merits for your explanation.
Yeah. consciousness in Buddhism. So that is where we call as the vijnana, say the cognitive part, say the knowing part is attributed to the consciousness. Say through eyes you can know a form. Through your ears you can know the sound. Through your nose you can know an odor. Through the tongue you can know about a taste. Through the body you can know about the tangible. And through the mind you can know about the mental objects. So that's knowing part is attributed to the consciousness, and that is why it is called vijanati, the knowing. So exactly you know, okay, this is what happening. So the consciousness is, we can say in that sense, is the cognitive part where you do the cognition. And the interesting thing is, so this cognition is fairly conditioned by so many other factors. And we need to, so the cognition is erroneous in a way. You can't get the proper true picture through the through this cognition process. So it is being fairly conditioned by so many other things. So ultimately, what consciousness cognizes and show you is kind of an unreal picture. So that is why Buddha mentioned consciousness is somewhat similar to a magician. So magician, the task of a magician is to show you some magic, but we all know that they are not real. But unfortunately, we love to see magic, we enjoy magic. Similarly here, the consciousness is presenting us a kind of a picture, but we tend to believe, okay, this is true, this is the real, this is the true nature. But unfortunately, consciousness does, with some various other the components, it does so many other fabrications, value additions, value subtractions, all different say fabrications, and ultimately it is presenting something beautiful or something attractive, and we get caught to that, and we highlight it as a person, he highlight it as a woman, a man, whatever it is, and then we being carried away by that. So therefore, it's a kind of a vast area, and Buddha mentioned through the development of wisdom you can understand the activity of the consciousness, and ultimately we can say through the vipassana practice, so we are now trying to understand the full operation of consciousness. And as we just discussed, we are the aim of the muni is to minimize the established type of consciousness, the fabricated kind of consciousness, because he understood the falsified nature of this whole process.
Thank you, Bhante. So we come to the end of the questions today. There is a bit more time, but since Bhante is busy with the POE program today, we will end the program now. So first, I would like to thank Bhante for his valuable time. Also share the merits with the organizers and all beings, both seen and unseen, who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass merits to the participants for joining the program today and for practicing and sharing the questions. Teruvan Saranai, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai.